Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us at a very short notice today at this special briefing on an update of the Ebola situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo. I'm very glad that we could get Dr. Ibrahima Sosse-Fall, who's the Assistant Director General for Emergency Response at WHO, to get the briefing for us because he just returned yesterday from already a couple of months again in Butembo. He has been there since March and has been leading the Ebola response in the ongoing outbreak. So glad to have this, and you will see at the nameplate there, that's not the the mistake of the UN. That's our fault in getting the names wrong. So it's not Sosse Ibrahima, it's Ibrahima Sosse, and Fall is the last name, just for your info. We'll pardon me? I can do this in an email too, yes. We will send the audio files after this as soon as possible with more material and with the correct spelling of the name. If that makes it easier for you, is that better for the cameras too? I'm happy to do that.
No.
No? You're good with this?
No, it's fine.
So, all right. So the one whose name it is says it's okay, so then we go with it.
Sosse is a middle name, but they're
so to make it easier, it's Dr. Sosse for us. And with this, I hand over to you. Thank you very much.
The middle name is Sosse.
Just make it Dr. Fall.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you very much for this opportunity to brief you today on the Ebola response in the DRC and Uganda. I just came back yesterday from the DRC, where I have spent 3 months since March to really beef up WHO intervention and working with many partners. And we are really in good progress in enhancing the UN system-wide scale-up. You might recall that in early May, there was a decision from the United Nations to scale up the response, where WHO is leading the public health interventions. So we have new pillars on political engagement, community engagement outside Ebola, security, and so on. This is under the leadership of David Gressler from the UN. But we are still facing some gaps in terms of financing, but we are making progress. And in terms of epidemiological situation, since the beginning of the outbreak, we have recorded 2,284 cases, and 1,540 people died from the disease. But at the same time, we have 637 people who survived the disease, and I think this is important. And as I'm speaking, we have close to 90 people still under treatment in the treatment centers. If you compare the 25th week to the 24th week, we have seen some progress, because the week before we have had 106 cases, and last week we have had 79 cases. I think this is important. And we continue to see the impact in Butembo and Katwa. You might recall that in March and May, we were very worried about Butembo and Katwa. This is a urban city with close to 3 million people. And right now, we are only seeing sporadic cases in Butembo and Katwa. But the risk is still important. As you know, for Ebola, you only need one case to start spreading, or one high-risk contact, not follow-up, can spread the disease. But it's important to acknowledge the progress in Butembo and Katwa. At the same time, we have a new hotspot in the rural area, in Mabalako and Mandima. And the outbreak started there last year and spread to all the disease. So it's important to break this vicious cycle to contain very quickly the situation in Mabalako and Mandima, where we have more than 55% of the cases coming from. And so far, we have vaccinated over 150,000 people using also the new protocol we started using 2 or 3 weeks ago to make sure that we can vaccinate more people in a more rapid manner. and more than 1,000 people already have been treated using the new therapeutics. So Beni is a concern because Beni is close to the hotspot of Mandima and Mabalako, and Beni also is a urban city where we have over 400,000 people. So we have on four health areas in Beni where we still have transmission. So we are working with the team to reinforce everything around Beni, around Mabalako, around Butembo. And it's important also to highlight the UN scale-up I talked about. We are making progress, and we are working together for the new SRP, the Strategic Response Plan for DRC, from July to December. This plan will be launched on 8th of July, and this is a very inclusive process where all partners, NGOs, UN, and local NGOs are working together to make sure that we take advantage of all, you know, forces we have on the ground. And it's also important to talk about what happened in Uganda, you know, some days ago. There was a family from DRC, from Arroyo, talked about, you know, Mabalako and Mandima. That family moved to Uganda with three persons who were already infected. Part of the family remained in DRC. So as I'm speaking, we don't have local transmission in Uganda, but we were able to identify high-risk contact and to vaccinate over 1,200 people in Uganda to make sure that they are protected. And it really shows us that the risk is still very high in neighboring countries like Uganda, Rwanda, South Sudan, and Burundi. And we are also happy to report that investment in preparedness is critical, because we started working with these countries many months ago, and we were able, using the cross-border communication between DRC and Uganda, to be able to detect very quickly these cases and contain them. But we need to continue investing in preparedness, because the risk is still there. And since the beginning of the year, we didn't get any financing for preparedness in neighboring countries. It's really important to continue to invest on preparedness. Otherwise, you might be surprised. And if you look at the border between DRC and Uganda, even in only one entry point, during market day, you have over 20,000 people crossing from DRC to Uganda. So it's really crucial to continue investing in that. And for the overall response also, we still have important gaps we need to fill while finalizing the next strategic response plans, because Ebola is a matter of global health security. It's very important to make sure that we have the global commitment for financing, and the intervention will not be disrupted by financial concerns. I think this is extremely important for us. Thank you. Happy to respond to your questions and comments.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fall. And of course, we are now ready for your questions. The first I have with Lisa, please.
Good morning. First, for you, Christian, when you send the email of the correct name of your participant, could you also spell all these names? Let's see, Mandinga I have, but I missed the second name. If you could just kind of give us the names. The spelling is technical, but I always get confused with that. Thank you. So, Dr. Fall, I'd like to ask you, in regard to vaccinations in Uganda, I had read that there was a reluctance on the part of many people in Uganda to be vaccinated. Is this correct? Are you having difficulty in getting people to take the preventive vaccinations? And is there a new vaccination, experimental vaccine, which is being somehow used there in some way? Perhaps that's what's causing the problem. And then in terms of your scale-up, are you able to access the hotspots, or are you having difficulty in reaching areas where people may be infected? And this, of course, would contribute to the spread of the disease. and then so as not to hog things. Lastly, you talk about the finances, that you're making some progress. Remind us of how much you need and how much you actually have now, so we know what the financial gap is. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll send the talking points also with the notes, and this way you have the spelling of the various locations. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. With regard to vaccination in Uganda, I would like to highlight two things. We started vaccinating health workers in Uganda even before the cases moved from DRC to Uganda. So we had vaccinated already over 5,000 frontline health workers in Uganda. So when this family moved to Uganda from DRC, we identified around 200 contacts. And our strategy is to vaccinate contacts, but contacts of contacts, to make sure that we are not missing anybody. So we vaccinated additional 1,200 people, and all contacts and contacts of contacts have been vaccinated. We didn't have any reluctance in Uganda because the field was already prepared. People have been vaccinated already. And in terms of scale-up and access to hotspot, as you know, the security situation is very volatile in this part of Congo for many decades of, you know, civil war and number of armed groups. But one important progress I highlighted is really in Katwa and Butembo. In March, April, and even May, we have had some serious disruption in the response because of security events and some community reluctance. But we were able to decentralize our operation to go down to the health areas. And we have, you know, integrated teams working with communities to transfer to them, you know, important interventions like safe and dignified barrier, community surveillance, decontamination in the households. So we are in all 33 health areas in Butembo and Katwa. That's why we can have this impact right now. But at the same time, we have new hotspots in rural areas. I talked about Mandima and Mabalako. You have some small villages like Alima in the forest where, you know, it's the first time also they are reporting Ebola. The access is more challenging. And in the same area, we have some villages where you have both ADF, that's the armed group coming from, you know, Uganda, and some Mai Mai groups. So access needs to be assessed on a daily basis to be able to, you know, move up to the intervention. So it's really important to take into account this very volatile situation. You cannot just say, I have access, I can do everything. You have to negotiate, you have to assess and make progress. And the financial gaps for WHO for the current, you know, planning cycle is 54.5 million. Because of the, you know, life-saving intervention, we couldn't stop. We were obliged to use budgets that were not planned for this response, because you cannot be there and just watch people dying from Ebola. We needed to continue vaccinating. You needed to continue treating people who are sick. And this financial gap is extremely important. We have been discussing with partners to fill this gap while moving to the new cycle of planning. And I think it's important for the entire world to know that the situation is very fragile and we need to fix it.
Sorry, but this cycle, you need 55.5 million, and when does that end, this cycle?
This cycle is ending in July. Yeah.
A few days you need it and you don't have it, and then and then how much are you going to need for, what is it, a three-month cycle that you appeal for?
So we are still working on the budget for the next cycle. It will be a six-month cycle, not 3 months. So meaning that the needs will be even more important. But I think it's important to fill the current gaps because we have people deployed who continue to work and we don't want to have any interruption. Otherwise, it will be a disaster for the outbreak.
Thank you very much. Now, I think the next was Laurent and then Stephanie. Please.
Yes, hello. Agnès Pedrero, Agence France-Presse. Is it possible to ask in French? Oui. Oui, donc j'ai posé la question en français concernant le financement. Donc s'il vous manque 54,4 millions d'ici le mois de juillet, quelles sont les conséquences sur le terrain au niveau de vos activités? Est-ce qu'il y a des activités que vous ne pouvez pas effectuer? Lesquelles?
Merci beaucoup. Je pense que c'est important de savoir que les activités sur lesquelles l'OMS est engagée sont des activités critiques. Quand on prend les activités de surveillance, nous travaillons avec le ministère de la Santé et les communautés pour pouvoir détecter à temps les cas, les isoler et les traiter. Donc le financement des centres de traitement, c'est aussi un aspect sur lequel nous travaillons, la vaccination préventive. Et donc c'est des activités critiques que nous ne pouvons pas interrompre. Donc je pense que l'approche, c'est vraiment de mobiliser tous les partenaires pour qu'on puisse combler ces gaps à temps, parce que l'arrêt d'une de ces interventions critiques va entraîner une flambée de l'épidémie et un risque de propagation dans les autres pays. Merci.
Merci Agnès, un follow-up.
Oui, donc concrètement, ça veut dire que pour l'instant, vous n'avez pas interrompu ou diminué certaines activités?
Nous n'avons pas interrompu donc les activités pour le moment, et nous sommes en train de lancer un appel et de mobiliser les partenaires pour que ces gaps puissent être comblés. Parce que comme je l'ai dit tantôt, Ebola, c'est un problème de sécurité sanitaire mondiale. Si la maladie est hors de contrôle, donc le risque est énorme pour la région et pour l'ensemble du monde.
Merci. Stephanie, please. Reuters.
Thank you, Dr. Fall. It's been, 2.5 weeks or so since the first case, the imported case, arrived in Uganda. Are you confident, if there has not been local transmission, are you confident that you are able to follow all people potentially exposed to that cluster of cases in Uganda? And then how many people so far have received the therapeutics in Uganda, please? And can you clarify, is it all four or just three of the therapeutic drugs, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. In terms of follow-up, in Uganda, they were very effective in identifying contacts. And as I was just saying, we also identified contacts of contacts. That's why, even though the contacts were around 200, we vaccinated over 1,200 people to make sure that there is no risk of local transmission. So far there is no local transmission and the surveillance is working very well. And in terms of therapeutics, we didn't use the therapeutics in Uganda because when the two cases were confirmed in Uganda, they died almost within hours. And the family was brought back to DRC. So there is no case under treatment in Uganda. Thank you.
Lisa had a follow-up for West of America.
Still on Uganda, you mentioned the large number of people that cross the border into Uganda every day. What measures are being taken to screen these people? And then a question that I keep asking periodically is, in Ituri province, there is this inter-ethnic violence between the Hima and Lendu, and thousands of people have fled across the border into Uganda. So far, I understand no one has been infected with the disease, but is this of concern to you? And then I have a follow-up.
I think this internal displaced population and also people crossing from Ituri to Uganda is a big concern for us. That's why when we saw the first movement of population within Ituri, we sent a strong team in Bunia to make sure that we start working with the displaced population, with partners in terms of sensitization and preparedness. But the risk is still important. And what we do for border screening, this is what important part of the work WHO is doing with IOM and some local partners. And so far, since the beginning of the outbreak, over 68 million people have been screened in the borders to make sure that they are not moving with the disease. And we have identified so far 19 cases at border level that were detected, you know, since the beginning of the outbreak, 19. So this is really a very important part of, you know, our work. But as you know, in Africa, when you talk about borders, you have official entry points, but you have so many unofficial entry points. That's why it's important, in addition to the border screening, to really have a strong surveillance system in neighboring countries to be able to detect on time any case. I think it's over. I was seeing if there is any additional question. I talked about the Ituri IDPs and refugees. Yeah.
And let me just have a look around. No, good. Go ahead.
Yeah, there, Médecins Sans Frontières and other aid agencies have been reporting about their concerns of measles outbreaks, and this is the height of the malaria season, and they say that more people are being infected by these two diseases than with Ebola, and that they're very concerned about the impact, about perhaps it people are not really dealing with these diseases the way they should be, and that is having, might have a negative impact upon the Ebola operation. What is your assessment?
Thank you. This is a very important question, and you'll be surprised when I tell you Ebola response has been an added value to respond very quickly to other outbreaks. We have a big malaria outbreak in Beni last year, but because of the strong Ebola teams, they were able very quickly to work with malaria partners, including Global Fund, UNICEF, to start malaria campaign, including badness, you know, preventive therapeutic, and we were able to control it very quickly. The same for the cholera outbreak we have had, you know, in Butembo. So now we are concerned with measles outbreak in Ituri, and you know, measles outbreaks are almost chronic in DRC, but when they overlap with area where you might have Ebola is even more complicated because, you know, people who are affected may be exposed to nosocomial transmission and all kind of risk. But it's important to continue vaccinating, you know, against measles. You cannot stop intervention like that because you have an Ebola outbreak. But you need to make sure that the condition for infection prevention and control are there. You need to make sure that you can do a proper triage, not to vaccinate people who are already sick. And even if you don't have Ebola, you have to make sure that this condition exists. But we need to re-emphasize them to make sure that people are not exposed because they are getting vaccinated. But it's crucial to vaccinate people who are at risk. And for malaria, it's the same. So the risk is important in many areas. We continue to assess the risk for malaria, and we have already started discussing with the malaria partners to identify areas where we can have malaria campaign to prevent outbreaks.
Thank.
It's not interfering with the Ebola operation?
No, it's not interfering because, as I said, when you vaccinate against measles, you need to make sure that you have two conditions. You have the condition for infection prevention and control, and you have a proper triage system, meaning that if you have somebody who comes with fever or other symptoms, you are not going to vaccinate them, but you are going to refer them to the proper structure. I think this is important.
Thank you very much. And we have time for one more question, not to disrupt the regular briefing. And that honor goes to John. Thank you very much.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Fall. John Zarakostas for The Lancet. I was wondering, sir, if you can give us a bit more details on the high number of infections of healthcare workers, again, in the Malabako area. I think in your last report you mentioned 15, which is quite disturbing.
Thank you very much. You know, when we talk about healthcare workers in DRC, don't think that you have professional healthcare workers who are trained. You have some kind of private, informal health facilities with no professional. Anybody can go there and train nobody. So they don't have the basic treatment and requirement. So you can understand that these people may be easily exposed to Ebola because they don't know what to do when they see somebody who's suspected. And some of them, they, even because they are not real professional health workers, they don't get the vaccine. So these people are really exposed, and we spend time training them from scratch. But anytime you have a new area affected, these are the first people who are exposed. It's really a matter of primary health care and having real health professionals. You don't have real health professionals who are trained. I think this is the main issue. So when you talk about health workers, in fact, it's very important to have this information.
I've got a follow-up. So perhaps in your report, should it be ad hoc health facilities rather than healthcare facilities? I mean, it is a bit misleading.
Yes, misleading. Just to give you an idea, only in Beni, you have over 300 private informal health facilities, not recorded anywhere, not, you know, supervised by anybody with no standards. So really challenging. But I think it's important to really give more detail when we talk about health facilities and professional health workers. And the last, like 3 weeks ago, we had a meeting with private informal health facilities in Butembo. We have over 700 health, so-called health workers who attended. You can imagine the magnitude of work to be done in terms of infection prevention and control.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dr. Ibrahim Asosi Fall, WHO's Assistant Director General for Emergency Response. We'll send the audio recordings soon afterwards, together with the notes and the spellings of various locations. So thank you very much for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Saul. Yes.